This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's me, Lee G. Banks, at this incredible old building in the heart of Wolverhampton in the Black Country. I'm with Phil Prosser, who's MD of ERR, and that's all I know. What's ERR stand for?
It stands for Engineering Real Results. We provide engineers with real results.
And why have you ended up here? Why are you in this incredibly old building?
Well, when we formed the company back in September last year, and we were looking for new premises, we were looking around the Black Country, which is my roots. There was no other alternative but to have a place in the Black Country. As soon as I heard about this place, well, it was a no-brainer. This is where my dad used to come once a year to buy his work boots. This is where he used to bring me. I remember the smell of the leather. I can still remember it now. And when I found out there was accommodation available here, it was, as I say, a no-brainer. We had to be here.
And what was it like when you actually arrived here?
Well, when we initially walked into the workshops at the back of the building, we walked in through the workers' entrance. It was just a shell. There was dust, broken windows, but it was just a shell. There was absolutely nothing in the building apart from the original ironworks. But immediately we could visualise what it would look like as a training centre. The use of the space, the use of all the natural light. If we did a few things up, like the windows, replace some of the windows and things. But what we've tried to do as well is keep as much of the original features as possible. So the original windows in the Victorian windows are still there. We've still got all the pipe work on show. We've still got all the cast iron works. It's all on show to remind people that this place was built in the Victorian times. Now, for some people, that might not mean anything. But to me, the Victorians had this ethos of innovation. And what they did is they kept trying things and kept trying things until it worked. And that's what we want our guys to do, our students to do, is just keep trying until it works.
That sounds really good. Tell me about the building itself. What's the history of the building?
Well, the building was built in 1860. Well, they started building in 1860. And in 1868, Mr. Baker, James Baker, moved all his factory from Wolverhampton into this building. But one interesting thing about the people he employed is he used a lot of apprentices because he realised that once people get old and they fall off this mortal coil, then they're going to need replacements. So he always had apprentices going through and training new people in all the skills that needed to be done. So what he did, he expanded the building. He actually lived on site as well. His house is actually part of the fabric of the building. So all the way through the Victorian period, there was boots being manufactured in this building to send all over the world. But one thing he did do, he realised that he could make even more money for him and his people, because he looked after his people, if he sold the boots himself. So they opened a number of shops around the area selling Baker boots direct to the public. And of course, because of the quality of those boots, they were an instant hit. So people used to save their hard-earned money and once a year buy a pair of Baker boots. And that's where my dad comes in.
When you first came here, there was quite an incredible discovery you made, wasn't there?
There was. We were looking around the building and we were showing the workshop and the office space that we now occupy. But the owner, Simon Hill, said there's quite a bit of the building around. Have a look around yourselves. And we found some photographs. We didn't know who these people were. They were just photographs with dust over them. And when we investigated, we found out we had an original photograph of Mr. James Baker, the guy who brought this building to life. We also had photographs of his wife when she was young, Elizabeth, and when she was in her later years, pictures of his sons, his grandchildren. Every day we walk around this building, yeah, we're finding different things. So every day what we do is we, when it's a little bit quiet, which is not that often to be honest, with the number of students we've got in the centre, we have a little walk around, have a look in the cellars, have a look in other parts of the building, and every day we're finding something new. We find artifacts from when they used to manufacture the shoes, samples of leather, postcards, Baker boot postcards with original stamps on there from the Victorian era, black penny blacks, all sorts of stuff. It's just absolutely incredible, some of the stuff we're finding.
And you've actually built a small museum to this, haven't you? And you've got an art gallery.
Yeah, well, what we did, we decided that all this stuff we were finding was too good to hide away. People need to remember the past, because that's where we come from. And they need to understand how hard these people worked to make a living and to generate such a wonderful, vibrant place as Wolverhampton. So what we've done is we've started a little museum. It's not very big at the moment, but we're hoping to expand it, where we're displaying a lot of the artifacts we're finding, you know, the leather for the shoes, the postcards, the letters to the Baker boot factory, the tools they used to use, the pulleys they used to use to bring the leather from upstairs down to the factory floor. and we're hoping to expand that. So going forward, we're hoping to make that, you know, a big feature, a big part of what we're trying to do here in Wolverhampton.
And the big story is the story of Mr. John Baker, isn't it? How he came to be here and how he actually met his ancestors again for the first time in at least 50 years.
Yeah, it's an incredible story, really. We train plumbers and electricians in our centre. And over a cup of tea, a friend of Mr. Baker's happened to mention that he'd done a plumbing course with the ERR in the old boot factory. And, of course, Mr. Baker, being intrigued, got in touch, and we happened to say, well, we're having an official opening, we'd be delighted for you to attend as our guest of honour. And I think you'll agree, it was a fantastic event today, and Mr. Baker excelled. He spoke very eloquently about the history of the boot factory, and his time actually working in the admin offices here. So, yeah, it was an incredible story. So a chance cup of tea with a friend who's actually done a course and now he knows all about us.
And you've actually got something really special up your sleeve for Mr. Baker in the future, haven't you?
Yeah, we've had a number of photographs taken of Mr. Baker today. One portrait photograph in particular. We didn't tell him what it was for, but we feel it's befitting that a portrait of Mr. Baker joins his ancestors here in our boardroom. And just to remind people of that legacy, that it doesn't die, and that we value ever so much what Mr. James Baker did.
Excellent. Oh, I think that's brilliant, Phil. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you.
Well, that was Phil Prosser, and now we have Mr. John Baker, an ancestor of the original Baker family who began this old shoe and boot business in this iconic building more than 150 years ago.
I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the factory here. Which, of course, was our factory in the old days. I'm very pleased to be able to come along today to this old James Baker factory and to see that it is now being refurbished and brought back into use again for training purposes. This building was built by my great-grandfather, and in fact there is a foundation stone in the front of the building laid by my great-grandmother and dated June the 30th, 1868. The large single-storey extension at the back, where we are standing now, extending to Powlett Street, was added in 1898. It was a shoe factory making all types of men's and ladies' shoes, and these were sold through a chain of shops under the name of James Baker, which were opened around the Midlands and extending to South Wales and into the Lancashire area. My great-grandfather used to live on the premises in the part of the building to the right of the archway, that is on Cleveland Road. You will notice the front door and the slightly different windows on that part of the building. My grandfather lived at Tettenhall and used to travel into work each day by horse and carriage, and stables were provided in the yard on the right-hand side for the horses during the daytime. During World War II, the factory made a lot of boots for the army, and I can remember that the cellars were partitioned off with brick walls to provide secure areas for shelter during air raids. On the top floor, the upper parts of the shoes were cut out from the leather by clickers, a name given to them from the slight click made by the knives they used for cutting around the patterns for the shoes. Also on the top floor, the leather parts for the uppers were machined together, and photographs of this department still appear in the Express and Star from time to time. In the early days, power for the main part of the factory on the ground floor was provided by a large gas engine in the cellar with shafting throughout the main building. This, of course, was replaced at a later date by individually powered machines. And I hope this just gives you a short insight into the history surrounding this old building. And I know that there are some portraits of my ancestors, which you have already mentioned, on display, and I shall be very interested to see those. But I hope that's just given you a short insight into what happened here And thank you very much.
Now we hear from the owner of ERR and this very fine radio station, Mr. Jan Talensky.
Madam Mayoress, Mr. Baker, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. Today is about Victorian society, as you've gathered. So I would like to say a few words, what they were actually all about. And when people talk about Victorian society, they talk about Victorian values. And often we hear that they were sexually oppressed, they had a harsh life, they had draconian attitudes. However, the Victorians were very seldom like that. The Victorians were the architects of our modern world, who laid down foundation of our current business and information society. And instead of shying away from Victorian values, we should be embracing them with the fervour and passion which they had. The Victorians, like the ones who built this building, ancestors of Mr. Baker, and the surrounding, had a gift in believing that anything was possible. And there was no mountain too high, no valley too low, no river too wide, and no continent was too vast that it could be climbed, spanned, crossed or conquered. Their ideas and their ambitions were timeless, limitless, and the challenges and difficulties they overcome were always insurmountable, and the obstacles didn't matter. The Victorian attitudes was relentless displays forward. There were people who, once they had a problem, they just went and finished it, regardless of the fate, nature, and no other man could stop them. Once they decided to do it, nobody could stop them. And, of course, they threw themselves at anybody who tried to stop them, and they did a simple application, which is called information, investigation, innovation, and implementation. And how did they do it? So when they wanted an information, they said, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to find all about it. And then, through the information, they investigated. Oh, this can't happen. This is the problem and everything else. They said, well, this is how they're going to solve it. And their investigation investigated all the possibility why it could go wrong, but they were not afraid of it. They just said, well, we'll overcome it. And then, once they did all that, all the procedures were in place, they said, well, we'll make it better, so we innovate. And once they got it, they just got on with it, and they did the implementation. If you compare the time we live in, look at what we are doing. What happens today, that the information and investigation stages are hampered by health and safety, government rules, regulations, PR profiles, fear of bad publicity, and our ability to innovate, even in many cases of our desire to innovate itself, has been suppressed or killed by the fear of change, to fear ridicule, as people are telling us, it can't be done. We live in opposite society. In their society, everything can be done. If you compare the time we live in, look at what we are doing. What happens today, that the information and investigation stages are hampered by health and safety, government rules, regulations, PR profiles, fear of bad publicity, and our ability to innovate, even in many cases of our desire to innovate itself, has been suppressed or killed by the fear of change, to fear ridicule, as people are telling us, it can't be done. We live in opposite society. In their society, everything can be done. In our society, how many times you hear every day, can't be done. They overcome it. And you mustn't do it like that. Do it some other way. They figured it out. They said, we'll decide to do it, thus they did it. All this, of course, means that they seldom actually implement a timely and appropriate solution. So our society is not looking for implementation. They're looking for solutions, clever fixes. But at the end, actually very little has done. In spite of that, there are still entrepreneurs which follow the values, like Richard Branson, Jack Cohen, the founder of Tesco, Jeffrey Bezos, Amazon, people of science like Tim Barnes, Leon Trevor Bayliss, the inventor of the clockwork radio. Look, anybody can play a radio. All you need, no need for electricity, no need for batteries. And he said, an art is a pleasure, but invention is a treasure. And that's exactly what the Victorians did. They believed that inventing something is very valuable and very powerful. And of course, a man of ideas like Mahatma Gandhi, Mandela, Martin Luther King and others. So I believe that we should now embrace, as we stand here, the spirit of real Victorians. And I'm sure that those Victorian gentlemen whose information, investigation, innovation and implementation origin created this place. A place which the ancestor of the family of bakers should be very proud of. And that's why we invited him. We wanted to show him that we have not forgotten what his ancestors did. We will now train in this place, in this creative place. We now will train students who will go and, as a true Victorians, become plumbers, electricians. What do? They build, they create, and they go and help the society so their prospects and career prospects will live and contribute in helping to build a better Britain.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Well, I have to say, Lee, that was stunning. That was amazing. And do you know what? There were some bits in there where I kind of went, do you know what? That all makes sense.
Well, it is. It's quite an amazing story. And it's got its beautiful emotional side. And it was nice to be involved in something which actually was bringing history back into the modern days. But in the event was actually called History and Innovation. And that's what's been created there. They've recreated history and also done it in a really innovative way.
But that's what I keep moaning about in so many areas. People say, you can't regenerate an area because it was used for old stuff. Well, that's actually living proof that you can regenerate. You can still respect the history, but don't use it for history, if you see what I mean.
Because you
can't bring back those trades of, 100 plus years ago and use them again today because it just doesn't work. And I'm sure Mr. Baker would be the first to agree with me. But the fact is, you can still respect that old value and use it in modern business when you're talking about sort of cyber equipment and, cyber technology and all these wonderful things that are now accommodating a very old building.
Well, what's fitting about this is that it is the old trades. What's being extolled there are the old trades, the building, the bricklaying, the pipe bending, things that actually came out of the Victorian age. Even electricity was born in that period.
Actually, Wolverhampton was quite famous for that, wasn't it?
For what? Well, electric.
Yeah.
They don't even have light bulbs now, though.
Sorry, Wolves.
That's why it's called the Black Country.
Yeah, right. It's because of all the smoke. I'm sure they used to build electric or make electric light bulbs or something like that there at one time.
Everything. The main trade at one point was bikes, bicycles and things like that. But they were at the heart of the Industrial Revolution, and the art gallery within that college.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an exclusive art gallery. It's been designed purely for this place and an artist. I've forgotten the name, for goodness sake.
What do you like?
Well, I retain things and I retain all sorts of details, but names, because of what I do for a living, you make a note of names and so you don't have to think about them again. But now,
do you know Einstein used to do that as well? You must be clever.
Einstein, we have the same sort of hairstyle.
Well, you know the famous story about Einstein, don't you?
No, tell me.
No, it's, I'm not telling you a joke. It's for real. That was.
Was a laughing?
No, but you might have done. Einstein and some other guy are walking down the road, and his colleague said to him, "Oh, what's the address of the building we're going to, Mr. Einstein?" To which he reaches in his pocket to get his notepad out. And he says, "But you're Einstein, you know everything. Surely you know the address." He said, No. He said, "What I do is I store the information in my brain as to where I can find the information." Makes a lot of sense.
Of course it does. Me and Einstein think exactly the same, along the same lines.
Really? So you reckon you're as clever as Einstein?
Well, to be honest, he was a bit old, wasn't he? So he was like... So I'm probably a bit cleverer.
All right.
He dedicated himself to cleverness, didn't he?
Anyway.
His life was focused on cleverness. My life is focused on other things.
Right. Well, anyway, brilliant, brilliant piece, Lee. Thank you ever so much for that. And we wish Thank all the guys up there a lot of luck with that. It was brilliant. And we'll test Lee's knowledge of modern-day technology now. As we move over to space debris.
That's not modern technology.
It is.
Space is older than the Victorians. He was there before Victorians.
Can I get in? Anyway, apparently...
No, because you're too fat.
Scientists now estimate there are around 30,000 things circling the Earth larger than 10 centimetres in size. These are all bits of satellites, rocket bodies... that have been blasted into space over the years since the beginning of '60s, well, late '50s, early '60s, and up till today. And I was actually involved in a program on Radio 4, I think it was.
This was when he was a spaceman, ladies and gentlemen.
Where we were discussing what happens to satellites when they run out of fuel, because they actually run on a combination of solar panels, solar energy, and normal rocket fuel. And there is a law about this whereby now you can only keep your rocket or your satellite in a certain place for so long, and you have to have enough fuel left to fire it off into deep space so that you don't leave it lying around like a scrapyard in the middle of the Clark's Belt. But the trouble is, it's now got to a point where there's so much junk up there that they're finding it difficult to find a hole to put new stuff.
Isn't it ridiculous? Really makes sense. You can't even get your wheelie bins emptied on Earth, can you?
No.
So why were we worried about putting a load of debris up in space? We filled the sea.
Yeah.
We filled the sea with debris.
Excuse me.
What?
If you got debris flying around up in space and it hits one of the satellites that my telly's picking up signals from, I'm not going to be very happy.
And you wouldn't be able to watch Coronation Street, would you?
That's barred.
Barred?
It's barred.
I find it quite poetic as well, actually. That was an intelligent joke.
It was really, wasn't it? Okay, never mind. He's not interesting. I told you he wasn't that intelligent.
I'm telling you. I was making a point. You can't get your wheelie bins emptied on Earth. We've filled the sea with rubbish.
Yeah.
And now we've filled the space as well. We've filled the whole of the
universe.
That universe thing.
Right, okay. So Winston Churchill will feature on the new UK design banknote, which will come into circulation in 2016. The Bank of England has announced, funnily enough, just after we had paid a huge tribute to Margaret Thatcher, the wartime leader's image is going to be on the new, or the reverse of the new £5 note as of 2016. Good idea or bad?
Well, it'd have to be a very, 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 very big no, wouldn't it, to get him on it? Well, he was of a rotund, he was of a sort, he moved with a bovine elegance. He was a big boy. And that cigar thing, that takes half of, that was like 10 inches long. How are you going to get all that on? The note will be as big as a front door.
He didn't look that big on Doctor Who when the Daleks were there.
What, Churchill?
Yeah.
What, he was in Doctor Who?
When the Daleks came in World War II, yeah.
It was
real. It has to be. It was on Doctor Who.
Absolutely. I'm just wondering where they dug him up from. He's not been around for a long time, has he?
Anyway, Churchill was chosen, according to the bank governor, or the outgoing bank governor, Sir Mervyn King, because of his place as a hero of the entire free world. Nice one.
I think it's a good tribute. Yeah, why didn't they, though? Why didn't they just use their heads and think, well, old Maggie's just popped off. Why don't we do one of her?
I think that could have caused a new version of quantitative easing, but in reverse.
Well, everybody be giving them back.
Set fire to probably like some of those idiots. Little tiny bit of business news this week, which is partly really, really good. Samsung Electronics have posted record quarterly profits, mainly boosted by the growth of sales in its smartphones. And along the same lines as somebody doing rather well, the UK economy grew.
It did, by 0.3%. Yeah. Wow. I can feel the difference in my wallet. Yeah,
which avoids a triple dip recession, which means those silly beggars who claim to be the bastions of the world's money, who write these stupid reports, can't now downgrade the UK's economy anymore. And I bet Mr. Osborne's a very happy bunny over that, and probably blowing raspberries at a lot of them. And we're going to finish with, I cannot believe this story. This is Bernie Eccleston, the man of Formula One, on how to win friends and influence people.
Absolutely, we know the way he does that, don't we?
Absolutely. Ahead of the Bahrain Formula One.
Hey, I've been to Formula One and he hasn't, ladies and gentlemen.
I've been to the home of Formula One, Silverstone. The proper Silverstone. The real home of Formula One. Not all these pretend new racetracks.
And it's filled with silver foxes.
Yeah, right.
Old-fashioned sport.
There was a load of clashes before the Bahrain Formula One Grand Prix where protesters...
In fact, you could call it a no-Bahrainer.
Oh, no. They were protesting about rights and issues and the government. Well, not government because it's not elected. But this whole sort of royalty system that they've got working out there. And then the Formula One boss, Bernie Eccleston, says on Sunday that the race had given the protesters a platform. Yeah. He added, the government here were stupid in lots of ways to put this race on. But I don't think it's for us to decide the politics, good or bad. It's a good circuit, a good race, and we think everybody's happy, so we're here. Bernie, that's not how you win friends and influence people, mate, calling a government stupid.
Well, it isn't, Bernie, and just think, you're only a little man against the big world, and that's a bit of a silly billy thing to say.
We had to squeeze that one in, boys and girls. I've got to say thanks to Lee for going out to Wolverhampton and giving us that great feature story all about the old Baker Boot Factory in Wolverhampton. Thanks, mate. Really appreciate that.
And it's good. It was interesting. Really interesting.
Good. And we wish Rachel all the best. She'll be back with us next week. Yep. So until all of that lot's done, boys and girls, time to say goodbye, Lee.
Bye-bye.
And we'll see you same place, same channel, same time next week. Take care, boys and girls.
From the heart of Europe to the world. RTI.